From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 22nd day of June, 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. The USDA and state statisticians will be here with updates on conditions in Illinois, Minnesota, and Iowa. We'll check the agricultural energies with Dan O'Brien and hear all about the agricultural weather forecast with Don Day at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago, July corn for the day at $6.59¾. It finished a half higher on the afternoon. December, however, down 18 cents at $5.66. Soybeans down 20 and a half at $13.94½ in the July. November at $13.02¼, down 17 for the day. Bean meal off 980, bean oil 34 cents lower, and July wheat down 10½ at 651 for the afternoon. Live cattle futures finished at 123.17½, 215 higher. Feeders were up 325, and lean hogs were 2½ cents lower. Wayne Nelson now joins us from L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne. At least I thought it was going to be a good afternoon at one point during the trade, and after last week's outside up day, which I thought was really good for new crop December, we posted an outside down day today. What happened that turned the market?
Well, I think, you know, there's a lot of speculation going on with the weather forecast that we have now. With the business, it's not happening much in the corn market as far as we go, Todd. We did actually get some action in the bean market from the Chinese, the largest trade they've had in 3 months here, basically. You know, we just haven't been seeing anything. And there was rumors that this morning they secured another 5 to 7 cargoes of beans off the Pacific Northwest for October. You know, they did, but it was 14 to 17 on Friday is what they were saying. It was Sino-Grain buying it for their reserves. But, boy, when the weather forecast come out at noon today, just heavy as can be, you know, it looks like there's going to be some good rains coming across Iowa, Illinois, parts of Indiana, and Missouri and that way. So that just really sort of took the wind out of all of our sails that was trying to sail upstream.
Yeah, so you put that in with the ideas, and I don't know what this will be like on Wednesday of next week when we get to the USDA acreage report. But the ideas are that the numbers for corn and soybean acres could both go up. Although I made note that Scott Irwin, and I've not yet talked with him, ag economist from the University of Illinois, looked into some of the acreage numbers and said, you know, most of that's out to the west, and we don't really know where acreage has disappeared since 2014, but he thought it was probably back into pasture and such, so maybe it's not going to come in. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I think that we will probably see bigger numbers than what we're using right now. The trick is, as you know, the old Informa, the market now, basically they're up at 96 million acres of corn. A lot of people are thinking more that maybe 93 to 94 is a possibility, but, you know, and even maybe lower like that, and maybe less than a million acres added to the beans. So, you know, how much are out there? Were they added? Were they planted in North and South Dakota, and now they're not there anymore? You know, that planted isn't what, you know, when we talk about planted acres, they could be failed acres by now. So, you know, there's that going on. You know, and one of the things we have to remember is, you know, we're talking big numbers and where they are and what's going on. So I think that we're going to see some numbers that are going to be disputed on what the final harvested acres will be.
Will there be follow-through losses in the corn market overnight tonight, supposedly, or not?
I think as long as the weather forecast, when it comes out, the European model after the close today and before tonight, I think if it verifies what the American model said at noon, we'll probably continue to see a little sell-off.
Will there be follow-through losses in the corn market overnight tonight, supposedly, or not?
I think as long as the weather forecast, When it comes out, the European model after the close today and before tonight, I think if it verifies what the American model said at noon, we'll probably continue to see a little sell-off.
And then, of course, the other thing we're looking forward to next week is the grain stocks number. Any surprises potentially there?
Yeah, of course there is. The government's coming out with new numbers. you know, like I say, they're questionable. And they're the ones that are going to tell us sort of what the carry-in is going to be, which would change all of the balance sheets for this year for ending stocks and next year's ending stocks. So, yes, they're going to be big numbers that way. Big numbers to look at. I don't know that they will be big numbers. I think that the corn should have been pulled down, you know, to pretty low numbers, and I think the beans in the same respect. If you remember the last government report, why we increased the carryout on the beans because of a lower crush, and if we continue to feel that that happened, you know, that could get added back in. And, you know, there's always the talk about the long tail out of South America being their harvest was late. Will it continue to hold the Chinese or all the rest of the market from buying our stuff as early as usually do in harvest?
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Todd.
That is Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture released the weekly crop progress report. It shows 65% of the corn crop is in good to excellent condition across the nation, 54% actually good, and 11% excellent. Last week, those numbers were 56 and 12, and last year, they were 57 and 15. Soybeans around the nation are now planted at the rate of 97%. The rolling five-year average is 54%. 91% of that crop has emerged. The five-year average is 85%. 5% of the soybeans are blooming, and that's the same as the rolling five-year average. The condition of the crop, 51% good, 9% excellent, compared to last week, which was 53% and 9%, and last year at 58% good and 12% excellent for the soybeans. Winter wheat around the nation is now said to be 96% headed. The rolling five-year average is also 96%. 17% of the crop has now been harvested. The five-year average is 26%. The condition of the crop, 41% good, 8% excellent. Last week, those numbers were 40 and 8, and last year, 43 and 9. Now, here are the state statisticians with updates from their regions.
This is Rebecca Alter, statistician for the USDA NASS Iowa Field Office. With only spotty rains across most areas of the state, farmers had 6.0 days suitable for field work. Field activities included spraying post-emergence herbicides, side dressing nitrogen, and harvesting hay. Topsoil moisture levels rated 25% very short, 39% short, 35% adequate, and 1% surplus. Subsoil moisture levels rated 23% very short, 46% short, 31% adequate, and 0% surplus. Crops showed signs of stress from the lack of precipitation and high heat. Farmers reported corn curling and ground cracking in some areas. Iowa's corn condition rated 56% good to excellent, 7 percentage points below the past week. Soybean emergence was 96% complete, 1 week ahead of the five-year average. Across the state, 7% of soybeans were blooming, also 1 week ahead of normal. There were scattered reports of soybeans setting pods. Soybean condition declined to 57% good to excellent. Pasture conditioned also continued to drop this week to 37% good to excellent. Heat and continued dry conditions are stressing livestock. For the USDA NASS Iowa Field Office, this is Rebecca Alter.
This is Mark Schleusener, state statistician for Illinois with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. Temperatures were slightly above normal last week, and precipitation was mixed across the prairie state. Northern and southern parts of Illinois had below normal rainfall totals, but central areas got some well-needed rains. Overall, the state averaged 72 one-hundredths of an inch of rain, and that is one-quarter inch below normal for this time of year. Temperatures ranged from 1 to 3 degrees above above normal. There was an average of 6.1 days suitable for field work last week, and topsoil moisture supplies were rated 4% very short, 28 short, 64 adequate, and 4% surplus. Wheat harvest is now 12% finished, compared to 23% 1 year ago and 38% for the 5-year average. The condition of the crop was 2% very poor to poor, 11% fair, and 87% good to excellent. Soybean planting crept forward and reached 96% finished by Sunday. That compares to 93% normally. Soybean emergence reached 94% compared to 86% normally. And the condition of the Illinois soybean crop was rated 4% very poor to poor, 30% fair, and 66% good to excellent. The condition of the Illinois corn crop was 4% very poor to poor, 32% fair, and 64% good to excellent. Finally, pasture conditions were rated 6% very poor to poor, 27% fair, and 67% good to excellent. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Heartland Region, Illinois Field Office of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is Dan Loftus, State Statistician for the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office. Continued hot, dry weather advanced crop development, yet reduced soil moisture and crop condition ratings during the week. There were 6.4 days suitable for field work. Topsoil moisture supplies rated 26% very short, 46% short, 27% adequate, and 1% surplus. Subsoil moisture supplies rated 18% very short, 48% short, 33% adequate, and 1% surplus. Corn condition declined to 50% good to excellent, compared to the previous week's 58%. Soybean emergence reached 99%, the same as last year, but 9 days ahead of average. Soybean condition declined to 53% good to excellent, compared to the previous week's 61%. Spring wheat was 90% jointed, that's 6 days ahead of last year and 8 days ahead of average. The crop was 62% headed, that's 11 days ahead of last year and average. Spring wheat condition declined to 48% good to excellent, compared to the previous week's 68%. Pasture conditions also declined to 11% very poor, 23% poor, 49% fair, 17% good, and 0% excellent. For the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus.
Our thanks go to the state statisticians for their weekly updates of crop progress across the nation. Each Tuesday, we check the agricultural energy markets. This week, Dan O'Brien joins us from Kansas State University. He's in Colby at the campus there. Hey, thank you for being with us. Let's start with the price of ethanol. It was about this time of year, I think, that we bottomed out in ethanol. Can you tell me about that and what's happened over the intervening 12 months or so?
Well, yes. You look at last June 2020, we had gotten down, well, we were below a dollar, had gotten down to about 82, 83 cents per gallon. And, of course, the last numbers that we have are well over $2, almost at 250, 246 by the numbers that I see. If ethanol wasn't an on-the-margin enterprise where we had corn input prices moving along with ethanol and distillers' grains, that would be a recipe for disaster. But as ethanol prices, ethanol prices have moved up with corn prices. And if you look back at that time frame last year, we were at about losing probably 20, 30 cents per gallon of ethanol produced. In our current situation, here during the month of June, we're losing about 12, at least that's by estimates that we have using some Midwestern models.
And is ethanol tracking with the RBOB futures?
Yes. We've seen ethanol actually move up in more of a consistent pattern, it seems to me, than RBOB has. RBOB ran up strong at first and then really weakened. Ran up to about $1.25 or so, or $1.30, fell back off again down to $1, and then took off to the high side. Whereas for the most part, ethanol also had some ups and downs, but generally
has had a more consistent level of growth.
You know, for corn producers, it's really about what the grind is. I'm wondering what capacity is in the United States and whether it backed off because of the past year, meaning has been shut down or idled. And in that same point, how much we've recovered since the bottom?
Well, you're touching on a real issue. You know, when in the midst of the COVID-19 epidemic, we'd fallen off to about, at the worst of it, about 79% of our capacity was in use. But now we've recovered some to 91%. And I'm using a Renewable Fuels Association data on that. So still not doing just tremendous. I think we'd be doing better if the corn market was lower priced, probably. You know, we'd have better profitability prospects for ethanol plants. And I'm not bemoaning the high price of corn, because we have corn producers in our audience too. So I know we have to balance all that, but still, high corn prices are a challenge for ethanol plants as they balance again their costs relative to their revenues.
You know, you said they were losing about 12 cents a gallon, but it is about the twin co-products here. So DDGs would be important to the profitability of an ethanol plant. I don't know whether that's different from one part of the United States or not, but you probably have a better idea.
When you're comparing Kansas to Illinois, we make up more of our revenue out of the distiller's grains, basically because we're so close to our beef feedlots in western Kansas, and throughout the state, but especially in southwest Kansas. So we have a little bit more of our revenues probably from the distiller's grain side, but you all, answering as a Kansan, you all have more revenue coming in from Chicago and other metropolitan centers and all the direct gasoline demand that you have there. So it's a balance, I guess. What helps us in these rural areas is that we don't have many people, but we have a lot of cattle. So I guess that's how we survive it.
Do the plants lose money in general at this point?
We're trying to hit at the average plant. There are some of probably the most efficient running plants, and some that find themselves in areas of the country where maybe their corn prices aren't as high, or their corn prices are high everywhere, but on relatively speaking, they may be a little bit lower. So if they have, quote, a good deal, then they might be closer to break even. And no doubt when you show an average loss of 12 cents per gallon, that, gosh, there's some plants that maybe they have their debts paid off, they're still operating very efficiently, they're probably breaking even. I think every plant's running just as efficiently as they possibly can. But if because of whatever purpose they're not, then these are even tougher times than 12 cents a gallon loss.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you, Todd. Take care.
You too. That's Dan O'Brien. He joins us from Kansas State University in Colby. On this Tuesday afternoon, Don Day now joins us from Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Welcome back to the Great West, Don. Although I'm not there, I guess you are. I appreciate having you on the air with us today.
Good to be back.
Well, you were in Florida last week for something that you have been doing pretty often over the last decade, maybe more than that. I know you were part of the Red Bull jump from space, the Google executive jump from space, and now, because those all had to do with balloons, and now, just last week, you were down on the Space Coast with Space Perspective, and this one is the precursor to letting anybody who wants to take a ride to space and could afford it to go. Can you tell me a little bit about this kind of balloon rise you had last week?
Yeah, what's kind of good about this one is no one's jumping, so that makes it a little bit easier. But simply put, this is to give folks an experience of what it would be like to be in near space. Now, a balloon cannot technically get to space. You got to break gravity to do that. But the idea is to take folks up higher than 100,000 feet into the stratosphere, which would require all the same life support systems that you would need if you were going to space. But instead of being on top of a rocket, you know, full of very explosive fuel, you're gently brought up to the stratosphere under a very large balloon, and you can have a multiple-hour experience in the stratosphere where you can see 350 miles or more on the horizon and get to experience, you know, a near-space environment. And as you mentioned, for much less cost than it would be to get on a like a Jeff Bezos or a Elon Musk rocket.
Oh, this is very cool. So people that want to learn more about it can visit, I believe, spaceperspective.com is the website. And if they go, they actually can find a picture of you, too, under the folks that have been working on this project. It's really cool. But today, Don, we needed to talk about the weather in the Corn Belt and in your part of the world as well. Can you tell me how things are going in the Northern Plains?
Well, not really well. You know, there's definitely a pattern emerging here for the summer, and that is that there is an arch of heat and dryness that goes through the Northern Plains. This would be Minnesota, the Dakotas, across parts of the Northern Rockies of Montana, then into the Pacific Northwest and into the Great Basin. That area continues to show up as being the worst areas with drought conditions. And, you know, part of that dryness is getting into the northern and northwestern Iowa as well, parts of that northwestern Corn Belt. And the prospects for that particular area to see big relief is just not in the cards. There's going to be a little bit of rain and thunderstorm activity, but those areas are still going to be in a droughty situation. And you're going to hear this on the news by this weekend, and certainly by the early parts of next week, we are going to see extreme heat in the Pacific Northwest, parts of Central and Northern California, and some of that heat will spread across into the Northern Plains. Now, we're going to contrast that, Todd, with what's going to be an increase in rain and thunderstorm activity over parts of the Corn Belt. And this would include probably most of Iowa into Illinois, Missouri, into Indiana, Ohio, into Michigan. Some of the dry areas of Iowa could benefit. But you go just north and west of Iowa, it's still going to be dry.
So it becomes kind of the haves and have-nots. Number four, Minnesota, for corn production, is one of the have-nots, or at least a portion of that state, and part of the Dakotas. I suppose, does Kansas going to be, which side do Kansas and Missouri end up on?
You know, Kansas and Missouri are going to do okay. This will be especially true over southern and eastern areas of Kansas, throughout all of Missouri, northeastern Oklahoma. Those areas are going to do very well over the next 10 days. There's going to be quite a bit of activity in the south central and southeastern United States. You know, and the trend we're seeing emerging for the summer is, I think, is going to stick, which is the wettest areas of the U.S. will be the southeast and the south central and parts of the east, and the driest will be from the Northern Plains to the West Coast.
We'll check in with you again next week to see how things have developed. We sure do appreciate you being with us today.
Thanks, Todd.
Oh, and thanks for talking about Space Perspective, too. That is so cool, Don.
Sure, I'm glad I could talk about it. Now, you know, so many times I have to sign these non-disclosure agreements, and what they do is they go from don't tell a soul, you know, you're bound to secrecy. And then after we were successful with this launch, I'm getting text messages from the CEO going, tell everybody, post on every social media platform you have.
well, I guess we're doing that. Hey, thanks. That's Don Day. He is with Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming, and joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.